Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello Rank Squad, welcome to Ranks FC, and it's the Dean Jones solo show today as Jack is away on holiday, and we tried to record a Patreon episode on Monday. In fact, we did record a Patreon episode on Monday, but it wasn't without its difficulties, and Jack's connections aren't that reliable, so we decided that for 1 week only I can fly solo and try to guide you through some of the big transfers that are still expected from the biggest Premier League clubs across the course of this month as we zoom towards transfer deadline day. I hope you're all well. I hope you are recovering from the World Cup and settling down now into club mode. Are your club living up to your expectations, or are they leaving you shortchanged at the moment? We're going to be digging into some big storylines over the course of this show, and I will be assessing what I believe is to come, what is realistic and what is not. As that term bomber that keeps doing the rounds now, transfer bomber expected, I don't like it. I don't like the terminology. I don't think it really works in our English vocab, but it's found its way in, and all the ITKs are using it now as they build towards big transfers, aren't they? So I guess that's what we'll be looking at today. The big transfers, the big players that are on your club's radar heading in towards transfer deadline day. I, to be honest, am just kind of relieved that Fulham have signed a couple of players, Real Madrid players as well. We didn't quite manage to get Bellingham and Vinicius, but we've got a couple through the door. Palacios and Gonzalo Garcia are Fulham players and wearing our new Fulham kit, which is finally here. Finally. Fulham always leave it late before letting us know new signings, before letting us know what kit we'll wear. But we are starting to get somewhere. I'd like to say that bigger names are coming, but I'm not convinced they are. Gonzalo does look like quite a baller, though, and I was really impressed by the fact that his English interview that he did with the club website was so good. He apologised for his use of English coming into the interview and then spoke better English than half the Fulham team who are actually from England. So, yeah, impressive stuff from him, and I look forward to seeing him in the number 7 shirt at Craven Cottage. But, yeah, for this episode, we are focusing on the traditional Big Six and the ranking at number one today. I'm going straight in on Arsenal, the Premier League champions, because they're trying to get some big business done, and it looks like they're on the verge of some big business because the Bruno Guimarães deal is getting closer. We're not quite at the finality of it all yet, but we saw this week how there was some doubts about Guimarães returning to club duties with Newcastle United as they began the section of their pre-season tour in La Manga in Spain. Now, Guimarães looked like he might not report at all, but it had been agreed that he could join them slightly later. He agreed to join up with them. He did join up with them. And by the time he was there and settling, Arsenal touched base about making a formal offer. Now, obviously, we'd already had a situation whereby Arsenal were making verbal negotiations about the prospects of a deal. Initially, they were slightly cheekily looking to pay around £60 million for Bruno Guimarães. Unsurprisingly, Newcastle not particularly happy with that at the time. And from Newcastle's perspective, to be fair, they've had a deal with Tottenham Hotspur this summer that Sandro Tonali could join them for a fee that will come out in the wash at around £100 million. So from their perspective, they're not realistically going to let Guimarães go for £40 million less than that. Now, obviously, this is a transfer that's been coming together over the past couple of weeks, but today is when it started to become more official. It seems like Newcastle are going to be settling probably somewhere between 70 and 80 million pounds. I don't think Newcastle want it going much below that 80 million pound figure. That has been the gist of how I've read between the lines, speaking to people over the course of the last week. And if we get to that level, then there is the likelihood that a compromise will be met. Guimaraes wants to go and join Arsenal. He wants to become a player before the season formally begins. He didn't really want to go back into pre-season with Newcastle because, quite frankly, he felt it was a waste of time. He wasn't going to be a Newcastle player. He's been told by Arsenal that they will sort this out. They will find a way to sign him. He's a big part of what they have planned for next season. And I don't think they intend to leave him shortchanged. The thing is, they still have to satisfy Newcastle financially, and they have to make sure that they are not left shortchanged either. So Guimaraes' camp have been hopeful slash optimistic that a deal would be agreed. It might even be that by the time you're listening to this, that we've seen the deal come together and that he's maybe been formally announced as an Arsenal player, or that maybe a deal has been agreed or is being agreed, so that Guimaraes by the weekend can become an Arsenal player and begin to settle into life with the Premier League champions. That is a marquee signing. That is a bit of a bomber. But obviously the one that would really, really shake things up now would be an addition to the front line for Arsenal. And we've heard so much, haven't we, about Vinicius Jr., about Julian Alvarez. And that would be the one that really, really shakes things up for the new season. Vinicius at the moment, looking like we've talked about both on here and on the Patreon, leaning towards staying at Real Madrid. This week, he has had his medical examinations back at Madrid. He's been spotted back in the training environment with his Real Madrid teammates. And Madrid are planning to have him involved with them next season. So as it stands, it looks like Arsenal really do have their work cut out to sign Vinicius, as we kind of expected, but that door still does remain slightly ajar. That bit of hope is still there. So don't totally give up, Arsenal fans. And even if that one doesn't come through, I think we might see something special happen for Arsenal by the end of this transfer window, because they are absolutely determined to make sure that this squad are a level up from where they were last season as they get stuck into a new term, defending their crown, but also looking to take that final step in the Champions League. Okay, and at number two in my ranking today, I've gone with Liverpool. One, because they are going after one of the biggest signings, potentially the biggest signing of this transfer window, but also because they have some business to attend to, I think, beyond that, and that would change the way we view them coming into the season. Now, Liverpool lost 4-2 to Leeds at the weekend, and there's been a bit of concern voiced about their squad makeup, about the fact that they were brilliant for one half and then collapsed in the second half. And fans are a bit concerned that that might reflect what is to come when you look at the fact that, particularly in defence, they look a bit sparse for options. They have a lot of injuries and they're not that deep anyway. So do they sign another defender? That's the one that will be to come later on. It's not the top priority, because the top priority is Bradley Barcola. We know that they're trying to sign him from PSG. This is, again, a marquee signing. Ideally, PSG trying to get £140 million out of Liverpool in this transfer window. Liverpool obviously trying to negotiate around that. It's interesting that along the same time as this, there's been interest in Cody Gakpo. Tottenham looking in and around that deal. That might be something for us to look out for. Liverpool not actively looking to sell Gakpo, though, even if they sign Barkala. So it would take quite a big offer, I'm told, for Gakpo to leave Liverpool at this stage. But obviously, with Barkala, it's really going to be intriguing to see how far they are willing to press ahead with this and how far they could push the bar in terms of what they would pay. I have been told that if push came to shove, they would be willing to spend more than they spent on Alex Isak last year, which would be staggering, wouldn't he? He ended up joining for about £125 million from Newcastle. And at the moment, soundings are that Liverpool initially went in for Barkala around 100 million euros, which is about £86 million. So if PSG ideally won £140 million, Liverpool are starting off at £86 million and Alex Isak was £125 million, then maybe that is the sort of figure that we end up reaching here. One thing I do know is that Liverpool have quite a lot of ground to make up on from last season because they finished well short of Arsenal, who won the league. But they need it to happen before the season starts, ideally, so that they can get things up and running and so that he can click into gear alongside Wirtz and Isak, who are now integrating and involved in the pre-season with Liverpool. So this is the player that they see as a level up in terms of what they've been using in wide areas as of late. You remember that when Luis Diaz was at Liverpool, he offered something which was above and beyond what they really had. And I think it was only once he left that you truly realised that. Mo Salah has obviously left the club and there are negotiations going on right now for him to move to Trabzonspor. But if Liverpool were going to go and sign that dynamic, pacey, risk-taking forward who's willing to beat people, cut inside, go wide, shoot, pass, assist, whatever you want it to be, Barkala looks like he's the guy that Liverpool have complete faith in taking them to that level. It is interesting that they do have a lot of attackers. They have a lot of options up front, yet they're still prioritising Barkala ahead of shoring up their defence. I do find that interesting because at the moment, they are pretty short back there. We've been waiting for Van Dijk to come back into action. They've had Gomez sidelined. Connor Bradley hasn't been ready. Might not be ready for the start of the season. Jeremy Frimpong picked up a knock at the weekend. Jeremy Jacque, Gioleoni, neither of them been seen so far either. So it is a bit of a concern for Liverpool coming into the season. And, you know, I saw someone suggesting online, at this rate, we might start with Szoboszlai at right back for the start of the season. And I mean, you'd ideally not want to be in that situation when you are looking to start afresh with a new manager and new intent for a new season. So, yeah, let's see. There is a dilemma there for Liverpool because their public stance and the official stance is that they are not trying to sign a defender before the season begins. But we know that they did have an eye on Mickey van der Ven at Tottenham. They have had an eye on Ezri Konsa at Aston Villa. They quite like Ilie Zabagni at PSG. They've been linked with Tomori. They've been linked to Ratui at Rayo Vallecano. So there are options out there that they've been contemplating. So wouldn't totally surprise me if we also see a defender come in at Liverpool. Even if it wasn't like an elite name, it was just a name to make sure they weren't caught short. But as I say, the official stance is that they're going to be patient. They want certain figures back in this team and for it to be built out in a way that they've envisaged all along. Okay, I'm going to move on to number three here. And at three, I've got Tottenham. Because Tottenham have obviously led the way in this transfer window, as we've discussed, and they've kind of set the bar for what's needed to overhaul a team, and they've focused heavily on defence, and then they've made big changes in the midfield with serious additions in Matheus Fernandes and Sandro Tonali. But what's happening up front, and why hasn't anything changed yet? Like Savinho, like that transfer has been talked about now for months, and it just seems to be dragging on forever. Not a great situation, to be honest. I've been told that as a croupy replacement target, that Omar Marmoush was on Tottenham's radar, but because of how long it's taken to negotiate Savinho, that they might look elsewhere, and they've certainly been doing that. Now, one name that has cropped up at the moment is Julian Alvarez. I personally struggle to see that Julian Alvarez would join Tottenham in this moment when he's heavily linked with Barcelona. And at the moment, Deco is in Madrid trying to negotiate for Alvarez to leave Atleti and to make a move to Barca. And we know that if that deal doesn't happen, which Atleti aren't that keen on it for it to happen, that Arsenal are there and waiting and they'd love to sign him. Surely Tottenham can't compete or win a race or a battle with Barcelona and Arsenal, can they? I'd say that this does show the level of ambition that Tottenham have right now. I've mentioned before on here that they fancy Endrick and they've had a look at that. They've had a look at Ollie Watkins. They've had a look at loads of different scenarios to boost their front line. I've mentioned Cody Gakpo earlier on in this podcast. But Tottenham do intend to make something special happen. I think they will make something special happen, but the longer it drags on, the more it all becomes a little bit Daniel Levy. And you wonder if they've truly moved on to a new era, and that whether they do get that one or two players in that make a significant difference. It would be fun for the Premier League and amazing for Spurs fans if they could go and sign someone like Julian Alvarez. What if they came suddenly to the table for Bradley Barcola and offered PSG exactly what they wanted and took him instead of him going to Liverpool and leaving them scrambling? You know, quite often it is Tottenham who are left scrambling. And I think we've reached a point in Tottenham's timeline when they're ready to show that things are changing post-Daniel Levy. And so I am expecting something significant from Tottenham. Maybe I've stuck them third in this ranking just because it's a lack of belief. Maybe that's still there for me, despite the messaging I get out of the club that this is real. I see that they've made big changes already this summer. Maybe I struggle to believe it in a way that I think Arsenal will go and do their business and Liverpool will do theirs. But yeah, that's where we sit right now with Tottenham. But certainly, you know, even Ollie Watkins has been linked. They're looking at in all the right places. It's just, can they take that final step and sign an attacker that can really make the difference? Okay, we're going to take a break right here. And after the break, I'm going to go digging into Manchester City, Manchester United and Chelsea and what we could expect from those three clubs before deadline day. Welcome back to Ranks FC, and we're going to start at number four in my ranking with Manchester City. And I still believe that there's a bit of magic to come from the Etihad. I don't believe that they've finished their business, not at all. They're obviously still working through things, and they've signed Elliot Anderson, one of the biggest deals of the summer. There's something missing, though. There's something, there's a bit of jazz, a bit of excitement, a bit of creation that is just missing from Manchester City. What's going to happen with Jack Grealish? What's happening with Savinho? What's going to happen with Marmoush? I think they're going to sign someone special. Now, I don't know whether this counts as special, but the player that has become a likely target over the past 10 days, I'd say, has been Pedro Neto. Now, I wrote about him about a week ago on Flash Score, saying that Man City have begun to take his potential availability at Chelsea more seriously. And that's the case. They'd been looking at his situation already before that. And given the direction of Chelsea's transfer business and Morgan Rodgers coming in, Pedro Neto suddenly became a little bit more intriguing. I think Man City are going to try for Pedro Neto. I don't know that it's going to kind of light up the Etihad in the way that I've kind of built this up at the beginning there. I don't think people are going to be rushing out to get his name on the back of their shirt. But I do think he'd be a pretty good fit for City, for Maresca. A better fit probably than Savinho and what they've got there right now. And I think that that's what is important. They've got to find the pieces that actually fit this team. And maybe it comes on direction of Maresca that that's the sort of player he actually wants for the new season. Now, in terms of a bomber, maybe it's Enzo Fernandez. Maybe that's the player that really makes a significant mark on the Man City team. There's a possibility. Enzo Fernandez is going back into Chelsea this week, preparing for a new season in which it's not very convincing that he wants to be there. A lot of people around Chelsea don't think he wants to be there. They're trying to discover at the moment whether they can get another season out of him, whereby he's fully focused and fully wants to be successful with Chelsea. If that's not the case, then they would probably take an offer. It has to be more than the £106 million they paid for him. But when Maresca arrived at Man City, I'm told that Enzo Fernandez was one of the first players that came up in discussion. Obviously, at the moment, Man City also still waiting to find out whether Rodri's staying at the club. He had back surgery recently. It must be very minor back surgery because there's a picture of him riding a horse this week. I don't know what kind of back surgery he's had, but that can't be that painful if he's able to ride a horse. To be fair, the wording had always been that it was minor surgery and that he'd be ready for the new season. So that would kind of fit with it. Obviously, the other big deal we're waiting for with Manchester City is Bouadi, who is supposed to be joining for the midfield. That is regardless of what happens with Rodri. And that is regardless of Enzo Fernandez too. Bouadi is somebody they just want through the door. They think he's elite. They think he's going to be a player that completely changes the complex of their midfield for years to come. Still so young, still learning the game, but can go into Manchester City and make a big impact. So I do think that that transfer is likely, and maybe even we quickly see some progression on that front for Manchester City. Okay, at number five, I'm going to move on to Manchester United, where there's still a couple of holes, and I'm just kind of losing faith in United actually doing this. Now, we know historically that United are willing to let their transfer business go all the way down to deadline day. In fact, they're even often willing to let it go right down to the final minutes, to be quite frank. But who comes in? Because Tchouaméni and Camavinga and Alex Scott and Adam Wharton and all these guys are really difficult to see at this moment in time coming in as that extra midfielder that they've been looking for. And at left back, they want to sign Lewis Hall, but they haven't actually made an approach at this stage. And even though Newcastle are aware of the interest, there's been nothing, and Newcastle's stance is you're not having him. Like, they don't want to lose anybody else. They're fed up, Newcastle. And so that isn't really going to work, I don't think, because the other thing you have to remember about Man United's stance is that they are refusing at the moment to get involved in price wars that ultimately ends in them overpaying for a player. And we've seen from the Andre Santos deal, the Youri Tielemans deal, that United, they take a lot of heart in getting value for money at the moment. So if they were to end up paying like over £60 million for Lewis Hall, I don't know that that would really fit with where they aim to be heading. So suddenly, I think I was optimistic about Man United's transfer window a month ago. And week on week on week, I've slowly started to become a little bit more concerned. To the point I am naturally now concerned whether they're going to have enough. Do they end up using players for depth that are not quite up to the standard that's going to be required to compete at the top of the Premier League, compete in the Champions League to a level whereby they actually make it through the league phase, and help United on the domestic front to actually win a trophy this season? Because their most likely chance of getting a trophy is the FA Cup or the Carabao Cup. They're not going to win the Champions League, and they're very unlikely to fight for the Premier League title. It's been 13 years since they won the Premier League, and they don't seem close enough to it. Champions League's just going to be out of reach. It's been 2 years since they won a cup, so like, just winning the Carabao would be a good one right now. I don't know. Maybe it's that Mason Mount ends up being the third midfielder. Maybe it's that they find solutions internally. I do think they'll end up signing someone, as I say, because they are one of the clubs that are willing to go and spend right to the wire. But my concern is that it might end up being someone they didn't really intend to sign when they set their stall out this summer. So let's wait and see. But yeah, that's kind of a reason I have United right down there. And at number six, I've got Chelsea. Because I just don't really know which way this falls right now. In a sense, I wanted to have them higher up here because they are the club that will pull out a surprise, like Morgan Rogers out of thin air, basically. They're always willing to spend money. Maybe I'm doing them a disservice by having them this low, but I'm like looking at it, and on the back of Danny Welbeck coming in along with Jordan Henderson, which I don't have a massive problem with, but it's obviously not like elite tier signings. And then they see Valentin Barco as well. Like, you're signing one player for the future who might actually end up going out on loan, two players for the fringes or for squad depth. But what about the here and now? And what if Enzo Fernandez does leave? I think there is still a chance that Chelsea make a significant signing. I wonder in midfield if they do go again for Alex Scott, who they've sniffed around all summer. Maybe Adam Wharton, who looks very likely to stay at Crystal Palace, but could have his head turned if someone like Chelsea was to come in at this stage. And I still wonder about the goalkeeper, Diogo Costa, back on the radar again at the moment. And obviously, like, there's been ongoing doubts about the goalkeeping situation. Chelsea's trying to insist that nothing was going to change, but it might. So we'll have to see exactly how this all comes together. But I think it's pretty clear that Xabi Alonso came into the club, had immediate concerns that are being rectified reasonably quickly, and that's at every level. Morgan Rogers paying an outlandish fee to get him into the team. And then Jordan Henderson and Danny Welbeck changing the experience and leadership levels. They've also, of course, brought in Marco Palestra. Lacroix from Palace is a good signing in the defence. You know, those two weren't cheap to upgrade the back line. Quenders coming in now from Sporting, so you've got that as an option as well. Emmanuel Omega doesn't really get spoken about at all, but you know, he signed 35-year-old Danny Welbeck when we thought that Emmanuel Omega at 23 was supposed to be the guy that did it. You know, very strange lack of consistency here from Chelsea, but obviously Xabi Alonso identifying something that we all knew was obvious, that they needed some experience in this squad, and they are trying to do that by signing these older players. But there just seems to be some middle ground missing for me. There seems to be somebody missing, and I don't know exactly where it's going to come. Obviously, they're trying to sign a left back at the moment, and in Pep Chavarria, and that will happen. That is in the works right now. So that is going to be a signing for Chelsea. That should work out well for Xabi Alonso's style of play. But yeah, let's remain, despite the sixth placed ranking for Chelsea, somewhat optimistic that they do actually do something significant. And I say, I think Man United might panic at the end and do something. At Chelsea, I don't think they'll panic, but they might do something. So that's why I've got them right there. Thank you for listening to me for half an hour. I appreciate it. Remember, you can come and catch us on the Patreon, where we are speaking multiple times a week. We did a big show on Monday, me and Jack. I'm going to be doing another show today. Jack's doing another show tomorrow. So there's plenty to come over there to keep you up to date on not just the latest news, but how we view that news and how we see transfer stories progressing, but also how teams are building out right now and what those squads are going to be looking like as we count down to the start of the season, which is coming in just a couple of weeks. Thanks for being part of the Rank Squad. I'll catch you soon. Cheers.